on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, October 22nd, 2025 edition. And there's no denying fall is in the air. It's a little warm here, but we are powering through this fourth quarter. And there's a lot coming up when it comes to market news. We have the Fed meeting. We have the meeting between President Trump and President Xi of China on the trade war. And we're in the midst of earnings season. So a lot to unpack during this hour. And this hour is dedicated to you. This hour is dedicated to answering your finance and investment questions and bringing you data and perspective. A lot of headlines, a lot of distractions, but our job is to keep you focused on the task at hand. Keeping you focused on the realities on the ground, as opposed to how you think or wish the world would be. We're trying to help you understand how the world is. Okay? That's what this hour is dedicated to. Now, just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Justin. This is Clyde from San Mateo. I'd like to ask you about a biotech stock called Vistagen. VTGN, Victor Tom Gary Nelson. I'd like to get your thoughts on it. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Vistagen Therapeutics, VTGN. And if you've listened for any length of time, you'll know that I'm not a big fan of biotechs. I call them the original Ponzi stocks. They sell the dream of finding the next cure for some rare disease or for cancer or something else. And during that time, they go through different trials and burn a lot of capital, shareholder capital. And what they do is they issue consistently more and more shares. And this is a name that's no different. A decade ago, they only had about 60,000 shares outstanding, 2015. 60,000. What do they have today? 30.6 million. That's how many shares have been issued over the past decade. And over that past decade, they've never made any money. They have very little revenue. You're talking in the hundreds, about $200,000 in revenue last quarter. That's it. Now, the technicals are pretty good. It's in an uptrend recently. Now, usually that is when there's a rally in these type of names, it's all about speculation on whether they're going to get through the next phase in their trials. And 99 times out of 100, maybe 9 out of 10 times, they fail, or they're disappointed, or it disappoints the market in general. Now, there can be the ones that work out, there's a huge short squeeze, because these are names where a lot of people are short them because they're terrible allocators of capital. So if you want to bet on it and you know a lot about the underlying disease and therapeutic that they're trying to develop, and you have some sort of edge there, great. But unless you do, I would avoid these names. Now let's go talk to Jarek from Canada, looking at EWZ, which is the Brazil ETF.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I'm looking at EWZ. I'm just wondering if Brazil is a good emerging economy to have exposure to.
That is a great question. And the answer is yes. I think Brazil is a good economy, anything that's natural resource rich like Brazil and with good demographics tends to be a good place to invest. However, South America is one of those places that has above average political risk. And okay. that's what you have to understand, is that while there are some good longer term tailwinds, there's consistent near term worries that the political situation can and will likely become more volatile. And so it's with that, you have to be okay with that level of volatility. Now, this is a name that's been in an uptrend pretty much ever since the beginning of the year. And frankly, as well as U.S. equities have done, especially since Liberation Day, foreign equities have done much, much better since the beginning of the year. And Brazil is no different. So I like it. It wouldn't be my only country I have exposure to, but I think it's a smart country to continue to allocate towards in some degree in your portfolio. So far this year, up 35%, but last year was down 30%. So understand that usually these type of investments wax and wane, but I do like it as a part of a foreign allocation overall.
Okay. And I see a good wedge pattern happening on this chart on the weekly. Would there be a good entry point? Like, I'm looking around like 32 or something if it breaks that wedge, but what are you seeing?
Yeah, you're right. It is in a pretty decent downturn. And if you want, it's threatening to break that downturn or downtrend, excuse me, since the highs in 2021. Let me draw a trend line here. Yeah, it's right there. So if it does break, yeah, that 32 mark, that is a clear indication that this downtrend is over. It's already tested that downtrend line once, and it's kind of hanging around there. And usually that is a sign that it wants to break to the upside. So it's not there yet. It's not confirming that breakout, but it is threatening it. And overall, I like what I'm looking at.
Okay, great. Thanks you. I appreciate your time, as always.
No problem. Thanks for the call. That was Jarek from Canada looking at EWZ, which is the iShares MSCI Brazil ETF. Now, we all know that you're probably making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. Before you do, I recommend you take a look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It's a free read, and it's posted over on investtalk.com. Now we're moving to a break. My phone lines are open, waiting for you at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think's a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about CORE in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is covering this topic: why gold could be the next Bitcoin. I love this. I love this because I've heard for the last decade that Bitcoin is the digital gold. Well, gold is the analog gold. And sometimes in a world of chaos, you want the analog version. Something that doesn't have the complexities and has a lot more history than Bitcoin. So we'll explore why gold continues to outperform this year versus Bitcoin and many other assets, most other assets. In addition, we have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to luxury items. Did you know that Rolex watches are down 30% from the 2022 high? And the price of private jets and boats down 6% over the last year? Well, why is that? We'll talk about that, what that means for the luxury business. Also, Walmart made a deal with OpenAI to be included in shopping inquiries on ChatGPT. What might this mean for the entire retail market? Okay, we'll look at that. And then if we have time, we'll look at American exceptionalism. American exceptionalism. Is it warranted? What I'm talking about is so much money that has been invested in the U.S. equity markets and economy. So we'll look at some numbers on that side as well. We also have voice bank calls. One is on catchment management, not sure what that means, and then Tencent Holdings and some questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Let's take a look at the market today, and it was overall a pretty solid down day. We did recover a bit into the close. The NASDAQ closed down a little less than 1%, S&P down about 0.5%. We had the broad U.S. market down about 2/3 of 1%. And really, it was the growth side of the market that struggled the most. So you had names like, Texas Instruments that had pretty poor earnings. AT&T down 2%. You had NVIDIA down about 0.5%. You had Apple down decently. What were some other big movers? So a lot of the Oklo, one of the small modular reactor companies, that was down a lot of the quantum computing names, down 15% or more. So it was certainly a rough name for the more speculative parts of the market that have been up as of late. And this kind of echoes what I've been saying recently about liquidity drying up in markets. And now we are probably headed to a more accommodative Fed, one where monetary policy is a bit looser. But in the meantime, until we get that in full, there's a bit of a liquidity air pocket, I think, in the short term. And then obviously you have catalysts of earnings, of the trade war, Fed policy that could potentially disappoint markets and continue to bring more volatility. And I think that is something we'll be watching for. Netflix did have earnings that missed by about 11%. So that was down pretty nicely as well. Let's see what else. We had Tesla down after hours, relatively poor earnings. And then what were the other assets? Treasury is a little changed. Okay. The 20-year auction was well received. That was good. Dollar index was flat. Gold finished down 1.1% after a 6% decline yesterday. So we're getting a nice little refresh in sentiment, I think, on the gold market. I think that was good. Bitcoin futures down 3.4%. And WTI crude up 2.2% after a report that U.S. lifted restrictions on Ukraine using Western long-range missiles against Russia. And that could upend their oil industry and allow Ukraine to inflict even more damage than they've already done. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of the drones, they've been flying drones into Russia and damaging a lot of their oil refineries and infrastructure to move oil and gas. And that's kind of really hurt as of late. And so if this is another tool in their arsenal, this could certainly bring down overall supply for oil from Russia. So that was part of the reason for oil being up. So that was the market today. We're still in, I think, in a pullback period with higher volatility to come. Now we're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, and more answers to your questions. So whatever's on your mind, money related, no question is too simple or too complex. We are here to help. So I encourage you to call now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Rain or shine, there's always value in the InvestTalk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
Our main focus point is about why gold could be the next Bitcoin. I love this topic. We all know gold's been in the news, well above $4,000 an ounce, and it's pulled back the last few days, but still kind of around the 4,100 mark. And investors are talking a lot more about the debasement trade, which it's kind of shocking that this is just being discussed, because it's really been a many decade path towards this inevitable endpoint, which is debasing the currency, inflating away the debt, etc. Now, historically, gold and Bitcoin have moved pretty closely because they're both in many ways liquidity proxies. Now, gold tends to have more correlation with, say, the dollar, whereas Bitcoin has more correlation with tech stocks. Now, neither are perfect, and they certainly can decouple from those other measures. But right now, they're especially decoupling from each other. So how should investors think about this? Let's start with gold. There are three main drivers to the gold, especially recent move. Number one is Chinese buying. Number two is dollar policy. And number three is retail interest. Now, what's the biggest factor? At least as of late, absolutely Chinese buying. And what I think is happening here is China is expanding what is called the Shanghai Gold Exchange, and they opened a vault in Hong Kong. And basically, they want to use the yuan as a global currency. Problem is that most countries don't really trust China. And I think they floated the idea of having it backed by gold. However, they're not going to believe that they actually have that gold. They're not going to trust the Chinese government just to say that. So what they're going to do is, and they've already started this, they opened the first offshore vault, and that's in Hong Kong, place of free trade. They're going to open another one in Singapore, Zurich, and Dubai. They have Asia, Middle East, Europe. And these are going to be audited, and everyone's going to know exactly how much gold are in these vaults. And in order to expand this, they've been buying warrants for gold for delivery. And demand has exploded really since July, since the opening of the Shanghai Gold Exchange in Hong Kong. So that is the main source of demand as of late, and why I think gold prices have gone somewhat parabolic. And then you have the retail trader obviously chasing the returns. And you have the dollar has been weak this year, but it hasn't been that weak against other currencies as of late. But gold is the original currency, and so it absolutely has been weak compared to gold. And what's interesting about the retail side is that retail's been focused on Bitcoin. They've been focused on owning that. And the allocation to gold is extremely low. Around 2% of the average portfolio. I believe in the 80s, it peaked out around 8% of the average portfolio. So there's still a lot of room for the retail investor to buy more. So for all these reasons and the geopolitical volatility, I still remain bullish on gold, even though you're going to get these pullbacks. I talked to, I think it was on Monday, I got a caller and I said, don't be surprised if you get a 10%, 20% pullback in the gold miners in a very quick order because of the retail fervor. And what did we get just a day or two later? We got that massive pullback. But in the context of history of volatility within this space, that's very normal. So if you're going to invest, understand the volatility. Be comfortable with it. Now, what about Bitcoin? Bitcoin is naturally even more volatile. So if you don't like volatility, you shouldn't be playing Bitcoin either. And as of late, it's struggling to really break out. And frankly, I think it's headed for a top. I think it might have already topped. Now, could we get one last rally in Bitcoin? Potentially. But most likely, I think we're near at least a medium-term top. There's the halving cycle, and we're kind of near the end of the halving cycle. And previous times this happened, well, led to a bear market. And so I think we are, the decoupling speaks to that, speaks to what is likely to be a Bitcoin bear market over the next 12 to 24 months and a continued allocation towards gold by retail investors as well as central banks, especially China. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, decoding the market, four strategies to anticipate stock trends. We'll break down how investors can combine momentum indicators, fundamental and technical analysis, mean reversion theory, and sentiment signals to make more informed predictions about where the stock market might be headed. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls right now on 888-99-CHART.
Did you know a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? As soon as you try the True Age plus True Health test by True Diagnostic, it will show you things you've never learned from a standard doctor's visit or your annual physical. The True Age plus True Health test is a simple at-home kit that gives you powerful insights so you can feel better longer. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. TrueAge measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number. It shows you how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations that will give you the largest bang for buck improvements to your health and to slow down aging. It's all done at home with just a quick, painless finger prick. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit truediagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Invest Talk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the Invest Talk YouTube channel and look for Invest Talk Innovators. Justin Klein is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Invest Talk. Today, my question is about cash management. I'm about 15% cash, and I just feel like it's not doing anything for me. So my idea was to increase my position in one of these derivative income ETFs that sell call options and have the high dividend, of course. And then imagine a year from now, the markets have gone down a fair bit. I would just sell my position in one of these ETFs, and then I would buy the indexes and then hopefully ride it into the next bull market. But now I'm having second thoughts because I've listened to what y'all have been saying to be careful about these derivative income ETFs. So any guidance you could provide would be great. I just want to be prepared for when the markets come down a bit. Thanks for all you do, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
Great question. And I like that you are embodying our warning that these derivative ETFs are not all they're cracked up to be. That yes, they might make it look like they have these huge yields, but what you need to focus on are the total returns. And sometimes that can be good, sometimes not so good. So do not, when you're looking at these derivative ETFs focus just on the yield because it's not really a yield. It's not. Okay. A lot of them, if you look, the prices decline and they're giving you your money back in many instances. And so your total growth of your portfolio is not double digits. Okay. So if you think the market is going to pull back cash and, you know, you probably want it in something that's yielding something decent, like a short-term treasury fund or a high-yield money market fund, something like that. So make sure it's in something like that. But if you think the market's going to pull back, these high-yield or these derivative ETFs are not going to help you. Most of them are covered call ETFs. And if the market goes down 20%, are you going to go down less than the overall market? Yes, but you're still going to go down. Do not think that they're a panacea. They are simply vol dampening. That's what it is designed to do. Now, they're going to use, and this is my issue with the SEC, is they're not kind of cracking down on the things they need to in order to protect and inform the average retail investor. They're allowing these funds to quote some big yield when the reality is it's not real yield. So I would just keep the cash if you were trying to capitalize on a market downturn in the next year or so. Let's keep things going and play two in a row from 888-99 chart.
Hi there. My name is Joe calling from Nashville, and I have a question about ticker symbol TCEHY, Tencent multinational company based out of China, video games, fintech, so on and so forth. Currently, it makes up about 5%, a little over, of my portfolio. I like the business, so I would like to get your take on it. Is it worth holding, or is it something I should look to sell? Listening for the show. Thank you.
At Tencent Holdings, and this is rallied from its lows back in March of 2024. Those are in $4.29, and it's about an $80 stock, so about 20 times forward-looking earnings. Not bad. The issue is always with China and the risk around that, and that'd be my worry. So how much exposure do you have to the Chinese market? They've been trying to counter the trade war with providing a lot of liquidity into the market. And that's helped. That's helped their stocks, their economy, et cetera. And Tencent certainly got some tailwinds from that. I think that will continue. And the chart looks fine. It's pulling back as of late, probably more worries around the trade war. You know, is it a time to maybe trim a little bit because of this run from the mid-30s back last spring all the way to 80 now? Yeah, probably. But it's a fine company, good business, solid growth, but there's still that China risk. And you have to be cognizant of that and know that that is part of investing in China. So, yeah, I would trim it, but definitely wouldn't sell the whole thing. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about luxury goods. Luxury goods. I think this is very interesting, especially in light of the fact that asset prices continue to go up. The richest 0.1% of Americans now hold 14% of the country's wealth, the most in many decades. Yet when you look at things like private jets and boats, prices are down 6% over the last year or so. Rolexes, down 30% from the 2022 high. Even fine art is down. And 2 years ago, Billionaires Row in San Francisco, there were houses for $30+ million. Now they're into the mid to low 20s. And what's interesting here is that they're spending in a different way. And they're doing so because fancy products and big expensive brands, they're kind of everywhere. They're not really unique anymore, especially with social media. Everyone's posting their Prada and Louis Vuitton, etc. It's no longer scarce. And it no longer seems as luxurious for the ultra wealthy. So what are they spending on? Well, they're spending on services mainly and very, very unique experiences. So this is coming from The Economist. and they created an index of ultra luxury services. Things like Super Bowl tickets and 3-star Michelin meals. And since 2019, that index is up 90%. While goods within the luxury space have actually fallen in price since 2023. People are spending more on housekeepers. For example, salaries for housekeepers are 50% higher than they were in 2019. Housekeepers in Palm Beach, they often make 150 grand a year. And then when it comes to things like Super Bowl tickets, they're up by double from what they were just a few years ago. The price of the menu at a 3-star restaurant in San Francisco is up 78% since 2015. And so when you're looking at these companies that sell quote-unquote luxury items, understand that the wealthy are no longer the primary buyers. It's the upper middle class. Now, the question is that eventually spread to the upper middle class? And does the demand for those products in total decline as well? I think that's something to take note of. Because for forever, if you go look at LVMH, for example, it at one point was, I think the owner was one of the largest companies in the world, largest or most wealthy individuals in the world. But LVMH stock peaked in 2023 at about $200 per share. That's rallied recently from low around 100 to 144, but still not great performance since 2023. Let's go with another caller question, this time from Minnesota.
Hello, this is Selena from Minneapolis. I had a question on Baker Hughes. Ticker symbol is BKR. I'm a little confused evaluating the stock. I own it. If you could just tell me what you think of BKR and if you like the space and if I should consider adding more or if I should consider selling. All right. Thank you. Bye.
I'm looking at Baker Hughes, a $46 billion oil and gas service company. And mainly it's selling machinery and equipment to the global oil and natural gas industries. And frankly, if you're investing in the oil and gas space, this is pretty solid name. Its return equity is around 18%. Free cash flow, about $2 billion. Minimal debt. $46 billion market cap, like I said. Forward enterprise value to EBITDA around 10. And it's in an uptrend. It's certainly outperforming most others within the space. And so I see no reason to sell it unless you're just trying to get out of the oil service industry as a whole. So yeah, I would continue to hold Baker Hughes. That is BKR is the symbol. And in an area where there aren't a lot of great opportunities, frankly, in the energy space, this is the type of name that should continue to win, because whether CapEx waxes or wanes, there's still going to be demand for their end products. Now, the InvestTalk voice bank never closes, so let's play another fresh question now.
Guys, I'm interested in investing in these two industrial companies, Eaton, symbol ETN, and Caterpillar, symbol CAT. I know they're pretty expensive right now, and I was wondering what you guys thought a good entry point would be. Thank you.
All right, ETN and Caterpillar. So Eaton provides electrical power and control equipment, hydraulic systems, and drivetrains. So it's more of an OEM part manufacturer. Also provides energy efficient solutions in the electrical segment. So it's certainly doing well for the aerospace industry and AI infrastructure. Now, the technicals are rolling over. I will say that. They don't look great near term and had a big down day today, 3.5%. Where would my entry point be? Down around $300 per share. Now, it says they're in $13 next year, and it needs to be a more reasonable valuation. 300 is probably where I would start to think about buying it. Ultimately, I think a better, let me give you a better number. Yeah, 300. That's the number on Eaton. Caterpillar, however, another name that's had a big run. They make construction and mining equipment. Clearly, mining is in demand, with gold and rare earth metals and things like that. So I think this is kind of a rare earth metal play. I like that. But once again, this is another name where it's having some recent underperformance, and I think it could be for a nice pullback. That entry point would be right around $420 per share. So I like both businesses. They're both not cheap, but on large enough pullbacks, I think they can both be a buy. Thanks for the call. Let's move fast and play another question now.
Hey guys, Kyle from Texas. Just calling about Monday.com. Don't know much about it, so just want to get y'all's expertise on it. Thank y'all. Appreciate it.
Monday.com offers cloud-based platform tools to build software applications and work management tools. This is a name that was pretty hyped, and the technicals have certainly weakened. It's now in a downtrend. It had poor earnings back in August, and it's just simply been chopping sideways since around the 180, 190 level. Now, earnings next year are supposed to be $4.68, the $190 stock. That's still pretty expensive. So I think one of the biggest risks in markets are when you invest in a name that's trading at expensive multiples and is now in a downtrend. Price to sales ratio is at 9, very high. Price to free cash flow, 30. Return equity, only 4%. And growth is slowing. Revenue growth was in the mid-30s in 2024. And this last quarter, it was at 27. And this quarter coming up is supposed to be 24. And earnings growth is only supposed to be 3%. So what are you going to pay for a business that is now flattening out from a growth perspective? I'm certainly not paying 30, 40 times earnings. So I'm passing on Monday. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
ChatGPT and Walmart have announced a bit of a partnership. Now, if you zoom out, however, this partnership actually could be threatening all retailers, including Walmart. Now, a lot of retailers' web traffic currently comes from things like Google searches. But in that instance, shoppers need to click on something and go to the site and complete the purchase. The idea with ChatGPT and any of these other LLMs is for ultimately the decision to be done in the app. The checkout process to be done within the chat feature. Like give an order, I want to buy it, and then it's simply charged. You don't have to put in your address or your credit card number or anything like that. It's all part of the ecosystem. And then OpenAI or any one of the LLM companies, AI companies, will earn some sort of a small fee to complete the purchase. Now, ChatGPT is the most popular AI chatbot. About 3/4 of total AI chatbot traffic comes through ChatGPT. Pretty interesting. I use Perplexity. That's my preferred one. I think it's better, but everyone has their own preferences. That's not a sponsorship. That's just telling what I use. Now, about 2% of conversations on ChatGPT are related to shopping in some way, shape, or form. And 38% of U.S. consumers surveyed earlier this year said they use generative AI for online shopping. Now, it could be just product recommendations or finding deals. And I think that will happen more and more and more. But if a LLM is doing its job, it's going to be hard to square truly answering those questions effectively and honestly with placement of ads, because that's another area that this will be pushed towards. Because remember, these AI companies are starved for revenue. Your $20 a month that you're paying for ChatGPT or your favorite LLM is frankly not enough to make up for the massive CapEx that is needed to make these chatbots possible. So letting shoppers shop directly through an LLM is likely to come at a cost to the retailer. And will it be worth it is the question. Just think of airlines. Most likely you're not buying or at least searching for your flight through the airline website directly. You're probably doing it from a third-party booking site. I use Kayak, but there's many other ones as well. And then you can go there, but oftentimes you can go right around it. And there's just a weird relationship between those companies and these third-party booking sites. And so this will ultimately become a challenge to figure out what this business model looks like. Will it ultimately hurt retailers and their loyalty? Will it zap them of ad opportunities as well? Remember, not only do the Walmarts and Amazons of the world make money when you buy something off their site, but they actually, if you notice this, when you search, you usually get advertisements as well. A certain number of those products rise to the top and are ads, and they get paid for that. And this is why Amazon is not allowing external AI chatbots to actually look at its site and scan it for products and pricing, because they see the potential problem here. But I think it's inevitable. Now, e-commerce won't be fully displaced by generative AI, just as normal retail stores aren't. But it's going to be a challenge to your average retailer, including the big guys. Because now, and you can argue, it even makes it more possible now to avoid the Amazons, avoid the Walmarts, and find the best price and best product anywhere on the internet. Because you're not doing the work anymore. The AI tools will be. So this frictionless shopping is a dream for retailers, but it ultimately could be the demise of some of these bigger box retailers. Now, I'm Justin Klein. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, retirements, planning, whatever it is, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a call with me or Luke. Just click on the portfolio review button and allow us to help bring clarity and confidence to your situation. Now, we thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about a free podcast download, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.